Devour the Podcast is for mature audiences only. Devour the Podcast.
Hello and welcome everybody to episode 29 of Devour the Podcast. I am your host David, along with me is Jamie.
Hi everyone.
And this is a very special episode. This is Jamie's 20th episode.
It is!
Yep.
You know, you didn't even mention that.
No, I did.
And I didn't even remember. I mean, wow, it's already been 20?
I know, right?
Look at us! I mean, you know, 29 for you, but, and yeah, we're about to hit the big 30.
Yeah.
A show, but I had no. That's awesome! Yay! I mean, I remember when we celebrated Devour's 20th.
Yeah,
you know, so that's cool.
Yeah, because that was you just celebrated your 10th the episode before, so that is awesome.
20 episodes and we're still hanging in there.
Yeah. We have a really good show this week. We've got our usual news. We've got our review of Empire of the Ants and Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, and we've also got some feedback.
Hey, back. And some shout-outs.
Oh, yes. That, too. Also,
yeah, we a lot of great people out there.
Yes, we do. Oh, and coming, I don't know when, we'll be doing an interview with Midnight Corey as we do a roundtable discussion with Gav Tookie Steele, the director of The Shadow of Death. And I don't know when that's going to be on this show because we're recording it next week, I think. And I'm not sure when Corey's going to want to release it. So it'll be something we'll figure out between us for when that'll go up, but I'm excited about that. Also, I'm trying to get a hold of Brandon Slagle to get him on to talk about his new film, The Black Dahlia Haunting, which we will talk about shortly in the news, but getting him to come on Skype is like pulling teeth because he hates it for some reason. But before we get into this week's show, I watched a lot of stuff this weekend. What the hell did I watch?
I don't know, but you were tweeting like crazy.
Yes, I was. Because,
oh, you watched all the Toxie movies.
Yes, that's right. I watched Toxic Avenger 2, 3, and 4. 2 and 3 I had not seen, like I said last week. And then 4, I own a copy, but I own the R-rated version, which compared to the version that's on Netflix, which, you know, they say it's the R-rated cut, it's not. It's the unrated version, and they are two completely different films. Toxic Avenger 2, it's okay. It's not great. It's just... 2 and 3 are better together, I think, than as separate films. They kind of work better as a cohesive unit, watching them back-to-back. I mean, 2 is fun because it's in Japan, and then 3 is kind of fun because there's some really good gore gags in it, but they're not great. And then Citizen Toxie is still probably my favorite after the first one, and it's probably one of the best trauma movies I've ever seen.
Which do you prefer, the R-rated version or the unrated version?
The uncut version. The uncut version is way, way funnier. I think.
Okay.
They get away with they did a lot more in the uncut version. And for example, like Pompey's backstory, like you actually know why he's a severed head in the uncut version, whereas in the R-rated version, he just shows up in the bucket and you're like, whoa, what the hell where did the severed head come from? And there's a couple other things that like they just completely cut out of the R-rated version that I was like, wait, what? A lot more poop jokes in the uncut version though. So if you're, I know, I think Alex from Skeleton Crew mentioned that he wasn't crazy about Citizen Toxie because it was a lot of poop jokes. And I was like, well, check out the R-rated cut. It's a lot less poop jokes.
Do you just like saying that?
Poop jokes, yes. Poop jokes is funny. I watched Brick, finally. Came out like in 2005. And holy shit, was that awesome. With Joseph Gordon-Levitt and a bunch of other people. It's like a 40s film noir style movie set in and around a modern high school, and it's about this character that I think his name is Brendan, played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and his ex-girlfriend turns up dead, and he's trying to figure out who did it. And they use a lot of very much a noir style story with the kind of traditional noir style like lingo and stuff, which is really cool. It's really, really good. I'd been putting off seeing it forever for whatever reason, but it was fucking awesome. I watched Platoon again. First time in several years. The first time I saw it was in like a summer school English class for some reason. I don't remember why, but that was fucking amazing. Holy shit, that movie's depressing. And then I watched something else. Oh, The Last Circus. Holy shit, that movie is fucked up.
Oh, I love the tweet that you're like it's pretty. You're like it's crazy. I don't even know. But then you're like, you know, but it's fun to watch. Is that what you said? And then you're like,
it was a
next
really
tweet.
Good movie.
Unless you're afraid of clowns, yes. Then not so much.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I texted you. I said it was really, really dark and really, really crazy, and really, really pretty and good. But if you're afraid of clowns, it's not a good movie to watch. And that one's actually about.
Awesome. We should do a clown episode.
We
should do a clown episode. We can do Killer Clowns from Outer Space and, you know, that or something.
Yeah. Last Circus is, I'd heard about it on Red Letter Media. They do the Plinkett reviews and Half in the Bag, which is a really funny review series. And they did two movie episode where they did a film called Enderon, which is a Indian action movie. It's ridiculous and awesome. And Last Circus. And I was like, ooh, that sounds awesome. So I finally sat down to watch it this weekend. And it is fucking brutal. It's a Spanish film set mostly in 1973, although a little bit in 37 during the Spanish Civil War. It's shot very much like a war movie. So a lot of handheld stuff, a lot of desaturation, a lot of really brutal violence. And it is really, really good. It goes pretty much batshit crazy about halfway through the movie. Just completely off the rails crazy. But it works, and it was just really, really good. And then I watched a crap ton of Battlestar Galactica, which I'm finally getting back to catching up on. And that's fucking awesome, too. Season 2 has been really good so far. And they finally released the classic Battlestar Galactica on Instant Watch. So I can start watching that after I finish new Battlestar, because I've never seen the classic Battlestar Galactica.
Cool. I used to have 2 Battlestar Galactica t-shirts when I was a kid. They were the kind, the shiny kind that, well, I mean, the decal was shiny, and then after you washed it a bunch of times, it would get all cracked and dull.
Yeah.
And it was so depressing. But, well, let's see. What did I do? I did, well, our movies, and then I watched Trilogy of Terror and Dark Night of the Scarecrow for Evil episodes. We're going to be doing that not on our show, but on the Horrorphilia show, Carnival of Decadence.
Oh,
we're doing
right.
A little reviews for that. And so you guys, when that show hits, you guys make sure that you give it a listen, because I can guarantee it'll be fun. It'll be, I don't even know, because so many different podcasters are throwing stuff in the ring. And this is Jason's baby. He's mm-hmm. doing this. So it's going to be nuts. There are a couple of other things that I'm doing as well, but yeah, you'll just have to wait and listen.
Yeah.
But so then what else did I watch? I don't know. I was watching stuff all weekend. But and then after a while, it just kind of runs together. What I've discovered and what we've started doing is it's been before it started raining, which it just did this week because of Isaac.
Oh, yeah.
But last week and over the weekend, it was so beautiful outside that I started watching movies outside.
Ooh.
On my, yeah, it was really cool. And so I watched Dark Knight of the Scarecrow with my back to the woods, and I kept turning around looking over my shoulder. And it's not even a scary movie, but I just, you know, I was all outside and it was dark. Mm-hmm. It was cool. and other than that, I don't even know. I've been gorging myself on Big Bang Theory lately. I love the hell out of that show. I really do. Sheldon is adorable. I want one. And so that's it for me, I guess.
Okay.
I'm sure there were some other things, but I can't seem to pin them down.
Yeah, I completely understand. I was trying to watch a movie that our friend of the show, Kelly, had suggested called Severed Ways, the Viking Discovery of America.
Hi, Kelly.
I got like 20 minutes in and had to shut it off. It was the most boring fucking thing I've ever seen.
Aw, really?
Yeah, this, and admittedly, like, he even said, like, the big upside of it was the soundtrack, which was a lot of Norwegian black metal stuff, which, yeah, that was cool to hear that stuff used in a movie, except that I knew every song that had played up to that point, and then I noticed they looped the intro of one song for a scene. I was like, why would you do that? Why would you use that song, loop the intro, instead of using this other song from the same album? So that was my snobby moment of the night. And it it was okay. Like, it started out fine, but then it had this really weird, like, shaky cam moment where they were running down the beach trying to, like, seeing all the bodies of the Vikings who'd been killed, because it was these two Vikings get left in America when the Indians attack their group and their group leaves. And so then Abe's like, this really weird shaky cam. I was like, could you not shake the camera that much? Because I can't see a fucking thing that's going on. And then it was just like fucking boring. And the dialogue was really bad. Like the subtitles were, it was subtitled. So, but like the subtitled dialogue was like, it's like, why are you using modern colloquialisms in a movie that's supposed to be set in the 1700s? That doesn't make any sense. That movie kind of sucked. But
what were they like? It's off the chain, bruh.
No. No, they said something really weird, and I was like, what? Pretty sure that's not something that would have been said back then. So, anyway. So, yeah. Let's go ahead and wrap up this intro and get into the news.
Our show is now on Stitcher. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phone, Kindle Fire, and other devices with Stitcher. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Be quiet a second, will you?
It's 8 o'clock in Los Angeles. It's 9 o'clock in Denver. It's 10 o'clock in Chicago.
In Baltimore, it's 6:42. Time for the 11 o'clock report.
Here's Johnny!
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Game over, man! Game over!
Your mother sucks cocks in hell.
Okay, it's that time again. That's time for the news. for anyone who's new, if you, maybe you're not familiar, it's time for the news.
Didn't hear the sound clip a second ago.
Maybe they just tuned in to a recorded show.
Yes.
Okay, first of all, Black Dahlia Haunting has its first trailer. The first official teaser trailer for the paranormal psychological thriller The Black Dahlia Haunting has hit the internet. The film stars Devaney Penn of Hold Your Breath, Britt Griffith of Sci-Fi's Ghost Hunters, Noah Dahl of Bad Teacher, Alexis Yakona of the Penny Dreadful Picture Show, Cleve Hall, as he was Sci-Fi's Monster Man, Jessica Cameron of Silent Night, Sarah Nicklin of Beg, Daniel Maraca of American Girls, and Brandon Slagle of Patient Zero, who also directed the film. The film follows a young woman, Holly, that's Devaney Penn, who flies from New York City to Los Angeles to follow up on the murders of her abusive father and stepmother by her blind since childhood younger brother, Tyler, played by Dahl. She soon encounters the psychiatrist assigned to treat Tyler, Dr. Owen, who seems to have a special connection to a spirit Tyler claims speaks to him, Elizabeth Short, known in lore as the Black Dahlia. Consumed by vengeance, the spirit of the Dahlia has been playing mind games with individuals who have experienced great pain in their lives, from Tyler to Malcolm, played by Slagle, a man who can speak to the dead by touching objects that were of great importance to them, and now to Holly. The film will have its world premiere at ScaraCon, formerly Scaracuse, in Syracuse, New York, on Saturday, September 15th at 6 p.m. in Screening Room 1, with a possible encore, followed by a Q&A with Slagle, Penn, Griffith, Dahl, and Yacone as part of the Syracuse International Horror, Sci-Fi, and Fantasy Film Festival. Following up ScaraCon will be a screening hosted by Slagle, Penn, and Cameron at Miss Misery's Days of Terror in Sacramento, California, on Saturday, September 29th. Additional screenings will be held at the Rapture Horror Expo in Mesa, Arizona, the weekend of October 5th, and the Hollywood and Vine Film Festival in Hollywood, California, the weekend of November 9th. Additional screenings to be held in Oklahoma and Nevada are expected to be confirmed soon. You can, of course, see the official first teaser. That link will be in the show notes. Mm-hmm. And also links to the movie's website, the Twitter page, and IMDb.
There's actually it has its own entry on Devour the Blog. So if you go there, you will see you'll see that whole press release along with the trailer and the little bit of a write-up I did for it. So I'm really looking forward to this. I have not seen anything Brandon has directed yet. I saw 15 Till Midnight, which he wrote, which I was really, really impressed with.
I saw 15 Till Midnight, and I have to tell you, I cried. I cried.
Oh, that's right. We talked about that.
Yeah. It was really good.
Yeah.
It was really, really good. I just bawled like a baby at the end of that movie. Oh my God.
Yeah, it's a really, really good movie. And it's a little weird for me because, as I've said in the past, Brandon and I have worked together previously. He was my co-host on the Podcast from Hell with horror news. So it's always a little bit weird when I see him in a movie because it's like, wait, I know him. So it's a little harder to, you know, disconnect the Brandon I know from he's playing a character. But 15 Till Midnight, holy shit, the movie was amazing. And it's one of those things that it's like, I'm not a huge sci-fi fan usually. I'm not particularly, but I thought that one was really good. And considering it was fairly low budget, it was really, for a high concept sci-fi on what was relatively small budget, they did a really fucking amazing job. And the writing was fantastic. So, and there is a full review of that on Devour the Blog as well. So if you want to check that out, it is linked in the press release that I posted for Black Dahlia Haunting. And the trailer looks pretty awesome, so I'm excited to see it. Hopefully we'll get a screener at some point, because that would make me happy.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I'd like to check that out. Now, was this one penned by Slagle?
Possibly.
Or did he just direct? Because I do like him as a writer, so that would certainly sweeten the pot.
This went up Tuesday night, was when the trailer was released, so... And I will link to it in the show notes if you want to check out the article I wrote. Yes, Brandon did write it as well.
Oh, cool.
So I am definitely excited to see it. And hopefully he's got a couple of other projects that he wrote that I'm really interested in seeing. Namely Song of the Shattered and Vivid. But I have no idea what's going on with either of those films right now. So, and if we're lucky, we'll eventually get him on the show.
Okay, well, we'll see. Moving on. Ryan Gosling is going to be directing now. How to Catch a Monster, starring Christina Hendricks. Written and directed by Ryan Gosling, How to Catch a Monster weaves elements of fantasy noir and suspense into a modern-day fairy tale. Set against the surreal dreamscape of a vanishing city, Billy, a single mother of two, is swept into a macabre and dark fantasy underworld while her teenage son discovers a secret road leading to an underwater town. Both Billy and Bones must dive deep into the mystery of their family if their family is to survive. Mark Platt and Adam Siegel will produce on behalf of Mark Platt Productions, along with Ryan Gosling via his Phantasma Films banner. I love that word. Phantasma. And Michael Litvak and David Lancaster via the Bold Films banner. Sierra Affinity will handle international sales for the film, which will be made available to buyers for the first time at the 2012 Toronto International Film Festival. Principal photography for the film is scheduled to commence in the spring of 2013.
Damn, they're already selling it and they haven't even...
That's what I know. That's
shot
what
it.
I was
That's
just
so
looking
bizarre.
At that. Wow. Made available to buyers for the first time. That, well, huh. Okay, if they want to, you know.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I don't really understand how this whole thing works with Hollywood, you know, buying movies. But, you know, it sounds like it might be interesting, so who knows.
Well, I would check it out just to see what his writing and directing is like.
Yeah.
You know, I'd be curious. Okay, now the graphic novel The Order has been optioned for film. Deadline is reporting that producer Scott Stuber has optioned The Order, a graphic novel from the film-friendly comic line of Arcana Benderspank. Well, that doesn't sound very... Oh, you know what? It said film-friendly. I thought family-friendly, and then Benderspank. What is wrong with you? The graphic novel tells the story of a group of priests put together by the Vatican that travel all around the world battling evil and the supernatural. Brian Nathanson will write the adaptation, with Stuber and Benderspink producing. No word yet on where the project will land or who else will be involved, but keep an eye on this one. Well, I don't know. What do you think?
It could be interesting. I've never read the comic. I've actually never heard of it until just now. But Arcana is kind of a smaller publisher, so it's one of those ones that I haven't been to a comic book store in a while, so I wouldn't know if they're a big seller. I know they were doing, I want to say they were releasing Fraggle Rock comics last year. So I don't know what else they've done other than Fraggle Rock and then this, and maybe they've done Muppet. I think they did Muppet Show too. So, or no, I think Marvel has Muppet Show now. I don't know. Somebody has Muppet Show. Maybe it's Boom. I'm so out of the loop when it comes to comic books that aren't like DC, and even then I'm so out of the loop on DC because I just haven't had the money to buy comics.
Or then you could have said, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, usually I'm pretty on top of this sort of thing because I'm a big comic nerd, but I'm so out of the loop right now.
Okay. Next up is Rob Zombie's latest Lords of Salem teaser art. Oh, by the way, he tweeted yesterday
that
he has finished it. It is done.
Oh, that's right. I saw that.
I know. Isn't that exciting?
That okay. is.
The Lords are coming. That's what the latest teaser art for Rob Zombie's The Lords of Salem tells us. The writer-director posted a new promotional image for his film on his Facebook page this morning. The film is going to be making its Toronto International Film Festival debut on September 10th. God, TIFF is going to be so good this year.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I was going to be there.
Yeah.
Meg Foster, Ernest Thomas, Jeff Daniel Phillips, Torsten Vogts. Plus, it's like the week, like right before my birthday. Torsten Vogts, Bruce Davison, Billy Drago, Richard Lynch, Lisa Marie, Maria Conchita Alonso. I love saying that name. Ken Foray, Barbara Crampton. Ugh, love her. Michael Berryman. Oh, he's so awesome. Sid Haig, Judy Geeson, Sherry Moon Zombie, of course, and Patricia Quinn star in this tale of witchcraft in modern day Salem, Massachusetts.
Have you seen the teaser that went out with the, or not really a teaser, but the kind of the video that somebody took at the at one of his concerts? Okay.
Yeah.
So what did you think of that?
I want to see it.
Yeah, I know. I do too.
When I first heard about this project was actually because of Barbara Crampton. When she became attached to it, that's when my ears kind of perked up because I was like, ooh, Barbara? Really? You know, I love her. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, I automatically pay attention. Plus, I'm really excited to see something else from Zombie. Like, I haven't been overly pleased with his last couple of things, but I want to get back to the Zombie filmmaking that I love, you know, because I love him. You know what I mean? I love his style. I love his look. I love his soundtrack choices. He just has a good feel for this, but something has happened, you know, so I really want this to be something that came straight from him.
Right.
You know, and with this cast, this is a really exciting cast.
Mm-hmm.
It is. So, I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I am too. And it's one of those things that, you know, I said before, I'm not crazy about House of a Thousand Corpses. I didn't like it. I thought it was an overly long music video. Devil's Rejects, I haven't seen in a long time, but I remember liking it.
I love Devil's Rejects. I just watched it again a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I sold my copy a long time ago, so I can't comment about it, unfortunately. But I did rewatch his Halloween and Halloween 2 maybe, what was it, 3 or 4 weeks ago, something like that? Because I think we talked about it on the show.
Mm-hmm. It is amazing how many times our discussions have boiled down to Rob Zombie movies. Have you noticed?
Yeah. Yeah, they really do. But I enjoyed what he did with both of them. I think from a technical standpoint, they're good films. I think from a creative standpoint, they're pretty good. The cinematography and what he was doing from that perspective, I think, improved. Especially in Halloween 2. I think he did a lot of creative visual things with that one. So just from the teaser I saw, which was shaky as crap because, you know, it was filmed at a concert, I'm really looking forward to seeing Lords of Salem when it finally comes out, or really seeing a real trailer for it because it looks like it's going to be cool. So. And I know a lot of people are probably going to bitch because, oh, Sherry Moon's in it, but she's been getting progressively better as an actress. So
I like her, and I really don't give a shit. I mean, he can use anybody in his movie he wants to. It's his movie. And yeah, exactly. You know, I personally like her. I think she's adorable. So suck it. You don't like that. You make a movie and you can put anyone you want in it.
Damn right.
Okay. Are we moving on?
Yes.
We're moving on. I made an executive decision. Will we ever see a Castlevania movie?
Probably not.
Is it? All right. Well, there goes that piece of news.
Sorry, go ahead.
It has been 7 years now since it was first announced that the film rights had been acquired for a video game adaptation of Castlevania. Back then, Resident Evil Retribution helmer Paul W.S. Anderson was attached to write and direct, with much later news coming in that Saw co-creator James Wan had been signed to write a new draft and direct. Anderson was still expected to be involved as a writer and producer and was just asked why it has taken so long for the project to take off. In the interview, he talks about the difficulty in making video game movies and how it has to be a fine balance between pleasing the fans of the games and opening it up to a mainstream audience as well. Yeah. And which I can understand. I totally get that.
There's actually a video referring to that interview that'll be in the show notes.
If I were making a movie and I was doing a video game adaptation, I think my first concern would be pleasing the fans.
Yeah.
But see, I don't make a movie for money. That's not what. When I make a movie, it's because there's something I want to say. There's something I want to do. There's, you know, and so I have the the luxury of doing that. But if you're doing it because you need to make money, then I guess you have to pay attention to everything.
And that's the thing that really strikes me about this is that he says, you know, he has to find a balance between pleasing the fans of the game and opening it to a mainstream audience. The Castlevania storyline isn't that hard to work out. It really isn't. It's Simon Belmont is a vampire hunter. He goes to Castle Dracula. He fights a bunch of monsters. He kills Dracula. That's the story of the game. That's been the story of the Castlevania games for 20 fucking some odd years now. Not that difficult. I don't understand why we can't just have a movie about Simon Belmont going to fight Dracula in a castle called Castlevania. There you go. It's not that difficult. Really, it isn't.
Well, you'd think it wouldn't be that difficult to properly adapt
Resident Evil?
To properly adapt I Am Legend, but apparently no one can get that one right either. So I don't know why it's so hard.
The Vincent Price Last Man on Earth is probably the closest we'll ever get to an actual...
But it's still not close enough. I mean, it's not so difficult to do what... the little things that make that book so damn good. But, you know, whatever. Yeah.
I mean, when I first heard that they were going to do a Castlevania movie, I thought, oh, that's awesome. And then my first concern was, oh, Christ, I hope Uwe Boll is not involved with it at all. And then it was like Paul W.S. Anderson. I was like, oh, fuck. And I mean, I don't hate him as a director because I really like Event Horizon, but his video game movies kind of suck because they're not really at anything at all like the video game stories. Like, the Resident Evil movies have pretty much gone off the rails and done their own thing since the first one, and that's fine. They're good for what they are. But it's kind of obnoxious because it's like I had to wait for, what was it, Degeneration to come out from Japan, which was like an actual Resident Evil style story with Resident Evil style characters, and it was CG. And I believe there's actually a sequel to that coming out, which is awesome. So it's like the stories can be told using the actual game storyline. This seems like he's making it way more complicated than it needs to be. Because, I mean, really, Castlevania, the story is very... I mean, we're talking about a game that originally came out on the Nintendo. The story was super basic. It was, go fight Dracula. That's it. You know, I mean, if you really wanted to get into it, you could possibly do, like, an adaptation of Symphony of the Night, where you're playing Dracula's son and you're going to kill Dracula. I mean, really, this stuff is not that difficult.
Well, maybe they're afraid that it's so simple that it wouldn't make a good movie, but... I don't know.
They made Van Helsing, didn't they?
Yeah, and look how that went.
Well, yeah. This is true. But I mean, if James Wan had done it, I think Wan probably could have done a really good job with it. But at this point, who knows if it'll ever come out.
Yeah.
We're just now getting fucking Silent Hill 2, so.
It's true. You know what we're going to have to do? We're going to have to wait and see. We seem to have to be doing that a lot these days.
Yes, indeed.
All right. Well, next up is the slasher film Smiley. That one with that really cool... I love the poster.
Mm-hmm.
I love the poster for this movie. It's the with the really cool smiley face that's all fucked up looking. It's coming to theaters October 12th. So in time for Halloween. Mm-hmm. AMC Theaters and Fever Productions today announced an exclusive partnership on the national theatrical release of Smiley from director Michael Gallagher of Totally Sketch. Beginning October 12th, AMC will exclusively release the film theatrically through its AMC independent platform on 28 screens in 14 markets, including New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, Philadelphia, Houston, and Atlanta. Yay! I'm gonna go. So the listing will be in the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
Smiley was co-written by Gallagher and Glasgow Phillips of South Park and produced by Michael Wormser of Some Guy Who Kills People of Level 10 Films. Now, did you see Some Guy Who Kills People yet?
Not yet. I've heard good things, though.
Oh, I haven't either, and it's killing me. Okay, the story of the film follows a mentally fragile college student named Ashley, Caitlin Gerard, who, after learning of an urban legend in which a mysterious serial killer named Smiley can be summoned through the internet, must decide whether she is losing her mind or becoming Smiley's next victim. Smiley also stars Melanie Papalia and Andrew James Allen with Roger Bart, Keith David, and Liza Weil rounding out the cast. Oh, Keith David's going to die.
Probably.
He always dies. He's going to get killed by an alien. That poor guy, every movie he's in, he gets killed by an alien. Well, all right.
I think he survived Platoon.
Yeah, well, that's true. Okay, well, also Requiem for a Dream, but then there was that whole ass-to-ass thing, so.
Keith David was in Requiem for a Dream?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. I haven't seen the movie in a long time, so I don't remember who all was in it.
I'm not doing that wrong, am I? Like, David Keith is the white one. Keith from Hardcastle and McCormick. And Keith David.
Well, yeah, Keith David was in Platoon, as was Tony Todd and Forrest Whitaker and everybody else under the goddamn,
yeah.
Apparently.
No, yeah, all right. I was right. yeah, woo! So anyway, yeah, Keith David, he just, you know, like in They Live and, I don't know, bless his heart, he just doesn't make it a lot. In addition to the AMC release, the film will be available on more traditional platforms, including DVD, Blu-ray, iTunes, Redbox, and cable VOD after the traditional theatrical release window has closed. And you can see the theaters in the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I do want to see this. I do. I really want to see it. Ever since I first saw the poster, I wanted to see it. So I'm kind of excited.
Yeah, I'll probably check it out at some point.
All right.
I'm going to go all the way to San Jose to see it, though.
Oh, well, yeah. But hey, fortunately, it'll be available in all the in other traditional formats, as yes. Those that I named. Okay, this is it. This is the last bit. Morbius is making a big return to Marvel Universe. Marvel announced this weekend at Fan Expo Toronto that they will be launching an all-new ongoing series, Morbius, the Living Vampire. Joe Keating and Rich Elson, the team behind the now-canceled Thanos, Son of Titan miniseries, will be helming the brand-new title that launches in January of 2013. And here's a quote from Keating in an interview with Newsarama. There are very strong horror elements to it, but there's a lot more to it than that. The closest comic I can even think of in terms of the types of stuff we're doing in here might be Grant Morrison's Doom Patrol run, but we're ultimately having a very different end result. This is a book largely about people who have absolutely no easy role in society, the outcasts, the people on the fringe, the people of the Marvel Universe who are even too weird for the X-Men. Wow, how fucked up do you have to be too weird for the X-Men?
Yeah, no kidding.
Ready to see some more horror from your Marvel comics?
Yeah, actually, I don't read a lot of Marvel because Marvel books are fucking expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to pay $3.99 for a fucking comic book. I'm sorry. Just no. Fuck you, Marvel. Also, I've never been a fan of Marvel. I don't really like Marvel comics. But I have read some of their old Tomb of Dracula stuff, which is good. A Morbius book, it could be interesting. Throwing out Grant Morrison's name in anything is always one of those things that'll catch my eye and go, I'll wait and see, because I don't trust anybody who throws out Grant Morrison's name we're doing something like him, because nobody does anything like Grant Morrison. I'm sorry. Grant Morrison is out of his mind, and only he writes like he does. So, but it's nice to see that Marvel's taking up a horror title again. That'll be kind of interesting to see.
All right, well, that's it for the news, kiddies.
Awesome.
Now we'll get on to the meat.
Yes. So we will be right back with our instant queue feature, Empire of the Ants.
I say every house in America should have an electric chair. And every man just once in his life should sit in it. Just so that he can feel the power of millions of gallons of electricity flow through his veins.
I got an electric chair. That's all I need. You get an electric chair, Sheldon, you don't have to worry about the audience. You get an electric chair, you can tell them anything you want, as long as it's real. You get yourself an electric chair and it'll sit there all night long. Kind of a funny idea, sitting in an electric chair and doing a show. Well, think of the therapeutic value of an electric chair and all the money it has. Yes, an electric chair in every home.
The Electric Chair, a show about horror. ElectricChairShow.com.
Electric Chair. Wow.
It came from the instant queue.
Of all history's prophets, none has a greater degree of credibility than H.G. Wells. With his predictions of moon landings, ray guns, sonic signaling devices. Is Wells right again? In his prediction of dangers to come in Empire of the Ants. In this fantastic tale, Wells tells the chilling story of a colony of ants who feed on atomic waste, causing them to grow into large, voracious monsters.
Kyle, let's get out of here! Come on!
And these giant ants are actually able to control humans.
He needs us. That's why it has to be this way. Why we must obey. At first, the people don't understand. They must be forced into submission. After their indoctrination, they realize that the ants only want us to take care of them and...
Empire of the Ants from 1977. Synopsis is... Sleazy scam artist Joan Collins tries to sell phony real estate deals down in the Florida Everglades. What she and her unsuspecting buyers don't know is the area has been taken over by giant ants. This was directed by Burt I. Gordon, written by Jack Turley and Burt I. Gordon, based on a story by H.G. Wells, which, sure, if you say so. Joan Collins plays Marilyn Fraser, Robert Lansing is Dan Stokely, John David Carson is Joe Morrison, Albert Salmi is Sheriff Art Kincaid, Robert Pine is Larry Graham, and Pamela Susan Shoup is Corrine Bradford. Wow, did this movie bore me to tears. This is a classic example of an AIP trailer being way more interesting than the actual movie, because this, yeah, there was no real empire in this movie. There were ants. There were lots of giant ants, but they don't show up till about 25, almost 30 minutes into the movie. And yeah, this was just fucking boring. Oh my God.
It really was. I mean, it really was.
The trailer at least makes it look interesting, because you're like, oh, this might be kind of cool. And the ants are, spraying pheromones under the people and making them do their bidding. That's the last 20 minutes of the movie. Pretty much the entirety of the trailer is like the last 20 minutes of the movie. So it's just the whole plot of this, like the first thing that made me kind of laugh was that the toxic waste looks like mercury, which was hilarious.
Oh, God. It was really kind of cool looking.
Yeah.
Because mercury is cool looking.
Oh, definitely.
But I was cracking up.
I mean, the special effects were fine for the giant ants and stuff. That was kind of cool. The giant ant puppets, however, looked kind of cheesy the couple times you get to see them for longer than like 2 seconds. They're obviously giant ant puppets. And they're pretty funny looking. I don't know. They seem to be taking this way too seriously. And one of the most baffling bits of the film was when they were sitting around the campfire and they're like, well, we know they don't like fire. And I'm like, really? It took you an exploding boat to figure out that giant fucking ants don't like fire.
Well, this is what kills me too, is they're all sitting around this campfire. I'm like, these are giant ants.
Yes.
If they really wanted to, they would come up and get you.
Yes, exactly.
And here's another thing that bothers me too. Okay, ants smell. Because of formic acid, ants have a very distinct odor. If you've ever smashed an ant with your finger or accidentally done that, you've smelled it. And you know what I'm talking about. It's the ant smell. Giant ants like this on an island would reek. You know, there's no way people would be able to, would even get on that island and go, huh. I mean, not notice that something is not right, because it's just, they're huge.
They are. And it takes like half an hour before the fucking ants show up to do anything.
Yeah, and they're so big. And I'm like, what's taking you so long to get there?
Yeah. And the fucking sound effect for the ants was annoying as hell. Yes. I don't know what the hell that was.
It's like the same. I don't know what it is about. Have you ever seen them?
No, I've not seen them.
Okay. Well, I don't know what it is about giant ants. Or ants, period, because there is an episode, they did it in them, they did it in this, there's an episode of the Wonder Woman where there's a woman and I cannot, Formica? No, not Formica. It's something like formic, it's from formic acid, I think, is her name, I can't remember. Anyway, she's this woman who looks like Terry Gibb in a cat suit, and she's got this, like, these, like, big, like, horse teeth and huge eyes, and she's like, I can't even do it, that's not right. But anyway, she calls the ants, like,
oh,
she
Lord.
Controls the ants, and they come in and do her bidding or whatever. But anyway, I don't know what it is, I have never heard an ant.
Yeah, all right.
I don't know that this is what they sound like, but everyone in Hollywood seems to think they do. So I guess, I don't know, maybe we'll go with that.
Yeah, sure. This was just, God damn it. It starts out like a nature film, talking about ants and how they are, they are equals to humans because of their abilities and such. And then it goes into this thing where toxic waste barrels are just being dumped in the ocean, because, that was totally happening in 1977. And then, one just magically rolls up on shore in Florida, because of course it happens in Florida, because nothing good ever happens in Florida. So of course giant ants are going to show up in Florida. And then the giant ants, like, yeah, I swear to God, they took a half an hour for them to show up. And then they blow up a boat, and that's when they find out that giant ants don't like fire because, you know, animals in general don't like fire. So I don't know how they took them that long to figure it out. But we spend a lot of time just on, like, a canoe for no real reason. They're trying
Which was the dumbest sequence.
Oh, my God.
I don't get how.
I don't get any of this movie. This movie made no sense. God damn.
I'm so sorry. Again, okay. It was... But honestly, I was thinking it was another movie. There is another movie with ants, and I thought this was it. This was not it.
It's okay.
This was not it. But, no, it turns out I had never seen this movie. And then I'm like, God damn, this is boring. It was so boring.
This was a desperate need of either a riff track or a MST3K commentary track, something.
Something. Yeah, Jesus. Something to... I mean, actually, we had more fun. Jen and I were watching this movie together. We had more fun, you know, ripping on it than, which is, you know, happens a lot.
Yeah.
But we actually have this. I made this. It's so cheesy. I made this row of chairs with little heads sticking up that I put along the bottom of the TV whenever we watch a bad movie and we play Mystery Science. I cannot believe I just admitted that on the air.
That's awesome.
It's a fun fact. And so they're little heads with and they're us, and so whenever we watch a bad movie and we know we're gonna be fucking around with it, then we put it on the cross on the bottom of the screen, and there you go. I am officially geeked out. I was also in the Mystery Science Theater Club in school.
Nice.
Yeah. Not that that matters to anyone. no, it doesn't.
Not really.
Anyway, it's for Empire. It's a two.
Yeah. I didn't like it. I mean, I didn't hate it. It was well made, technically speaking.
I don't know. Some of those effects were woo.
Well, yeah, like, but they were walking for 77 and
you know. Well, I mean, that's true. Movie. It's true. I'm just saying it doesn't hold up.
Oh, no, not at all.
But I did like the score though. There was something. It wasn't like there was anything specifically extra special about it. I just recall liking it. Like, it was like, oh, well, that's okay. That's the score is okay. But
yeah, it was kind of okay. I seem to remember it bothered me because it was one of those things where I was just like, there's nothing. And it was weird because I kept comparing this to like Dunwich Horror because it was like they're both AIP movies. And this one has none of the fun or charm or awesome of Dunwich Horror. And this is just all schlock and bad. Even the soundtrack was kind of getting on my nerves because I was like, why does this sound like a ripoff of Jaws? That's what I was thinking. It reminded me that it was just they tried to do Jaws without getting sued.
That's exactly it. I remember thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so no. Yeah. What the hell did I watch that I liked the score? Because that wasn't it. Thank you for bringing that up. I can't believe I forgot about that, you know, because Jaws and all, and I just did the whole thing, and I did notice that, but you know, so many movies have ripped off, the Jaws. I mean,
it's like totally blatant.
And the thing is, if you're going to do that, then your movie should be as good, but that doesn't happen.
No.
You know.
No. Anyway, Empire of the Ants. This is a two for me, and a two for you.
Do it for me.
Don't watch this. Unless you've got a bunch of friends who want to sit and make fun of it, but
it's worth that. I'll say it's worth that.
Yeah, I'd say if you can find a riff track or a commentary MST3K commentary track for this, it would probably be way more entertaining.
Or just your own, you know.
Yeah. Or, you know, just watch the trailer and then be like, wow, that was good. Because that's about as much fun as you're gonna get out of this movie. And it's a whole hell of a lot shorter. So, that's it for Empire of the Ants, thank God. And up next, we will be doing Elvira, Mistress of the Dark.
We have just seen rushes direct from Hollywood of pictures being released in the coming weeks. Here's a glimpse of a few of them coming to this theater soon.
There wasn't enough room in Toyland to escape the terror that rocked Baby's Cradle.
I notice you call him Baby, and the case history doesn't show any other name. What is his real name?
Just Baby.
To Baby, life was not a giant playpen. It was a living hell. He wasn't allowed to walk, he wasn't allowed to talk, but he was capable of it. Baby is a full-grown man trapped by three women with no way out.
Mama!
Damn you.
Baby doesn't walk! Baby doesn't walk!
should have let them take him.
Alba, you're not talking about that circus.
Mm-hmm. They wanted to put him in a sideshow. We should have said yes.
You're calling your brother a freak.
Oh, Mama. I just thought it'd be better that way.
Three. Four. Close the door.
I wanted to face you one more time to tell you that you're sick. You're the one who needs help, not baby.
That's just so much worse. You want him for yourself. Well, agency or no agency, you ain't gonna get him. Because baby belongs to us. No, to me.
He belongs to himself. He's not the subhuman thing you've made him.
Scotia International Release, starring Anjanette Comer, Ruth Roman, Mariana Hill, Suzanne Zenor, and David Manzi as Baby. Rated PG.
Okay, here's the deal. We gotta break into this house, and all we have to do is steal this one VHS tape.
Which one is it?
I don't know, man. Let's just
look at this, okay?
So special about this tape, anyway.
What the fuck was that?
Hey, no!
You're all gonna fucking die up here.
My apartment's haunted.
It's not haunted. I'm sure there's a reasonable explanation.
Everything you've ever wanted in a movie. A woman and a casserole. You'll see lots of weird romance.
What's that perfume you're wearing?
Super unleaded. Don't smoke.
Loads of drooling madness.
Ew, I hope you changed the sheets.
Hey, Elvira, we got us a couple more volunteers.
Great, just grab a tool and start banging.
A whole gang of awesome monsters.
I'm fast, Jamal, you know it.
And a few sleazy experiments.
I'm hurt. She's mad. There's nothing wrong with G-rated movies.
long as there's lots of sex and violence.
The charge is witchcraft.
We wanna have one of these every year.
See Elvira. As Elvira, Mistress of the Dark.
But if they ever ask about me, tell them I was more than just a great set of...
It's the greatest double feature of all time.
Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. This was released in 1988. Synopsis is, when her great-aunt dies, famed horror hostess Elvira heads for the uptight New England town of Falwell to claim her inheritance of a haunted house, a witch's cookbook, and a punk rock poodle. But once the stuffy locals get an eyeful of the Scream Queen's ample assets, all hell busts out and breaks loose. Can the Madonna of the Macabre find love with Studley Cinema owner, avoid her creepy great-uncle, titillate the town's teens, and become a Las Vegas dance sensation, all without being burned alive at the stake? This is directed by Joe Signorelli, written by Sam Egan, John Paragon, and Cassandra Peterson, starring Cassandra Peterson as Elvira, Edie McClure as Chastity Pariah, Bill Murray as Mr. Rivers, Pat Crawford Brown as Mr. Meeker, Daniel Green as Bob, Suzanne Kellerman as Patty, and William Morgan Shepherd as Vincent Talbot. And I know I've left off a bunch of people. The cast is fucking huge. So, we're not going to throw a spoiler tag on this because there's really not anything to spoil in this movie. You pretty much know exactly what's going to happen by the... within the first 5 minutes of the movie. It's super predictable. But that's actually kind of the good thing about it, because it's just ridiculously fun. I saw this, the first time I saw this, I was maybe 8 or 9. I saw it on TV and didn't really get a lot of the jokes. And then I watched it again when I was probably a little bit older. My dad and my stepmom are both Elvira fans. And so they had this. I think they've got a copy of her second movie, Elvira's Haunted Hills. And so I've been an Elvira fan for a long time. I was seeing a couple of her VHS copies of her show with the movies that they released, the movie Macabre on VHS back in the day. I remember when she released like 3 Halloween compilation albums, which I have all 3 of, which actually introduced me to Oingo Boingo way back in the day. And so, yeah, I remember liking this movie as a kid because I just thought it was funny. And then I watched it last night, and holy shit, they got away with a lot of jokes and innuendo that I'm really surprised got a PG-13. Like, a lot. Holy shit. They got away with murder in this movie.
Pardon me, is this face taken?
Yes. Or when she hits her head and Bob says, "How's your head? I haven't had any complaints yet." And he looks at her like, "What?" She's like, I'm fine. Or, "I'm flat busted." Oh, I'm sorry. I'm flat broke. This movie is so, so full of...
Oh, and the duck, when she's changing the movie matinee, and so it looks like she's holding F, so it says fuck. Yes. It's just, you know, little things here and there, and just, I love this movie.
Oh my God, I had so much fun watching this.
So many times. This is a movie that I watch probably twice a year. I mean, we love it. And it makes me so happy because I'm just, from the very beginning where the music kicks in when she's driving away and to the very end where you've got the dance number that is so freaking cheesy. Yeah. I mean, like and the rap does not hold up. I don't think it held up back then.
It was good then.
She looks fucking hot, though. I mean, she's wearing the, you know, that little outfit that she's got on with the tassels.
Yes.
That's sexy as hell. I mean, she just, that woman looks great. Yeah. And I think she's still fucking beautiful.
Yeah, because Cassandra Peterson, you know, out of makeup is still really attractive. Holy shit. And she's she's in her 60s. And she still looks amazing. So I will blame Elvira for my love of goth girls because, yeah. I think every straight male horror fan who has seen Elvira has been madly in love with her at least one point of their life with her.
Oh, yeah. My mom went through this weird little vampire stage when she in her 30s. And, but she had this thing, like, she just loved Elvira, you know, and we had this cutout at our house because she got it from the supermarket when they had the beer.
Yes, my dad has that one too.
And, I was like, oh, you're a little obsessed, mother. But, you know, so now you know where I get my love of horror from, though, straight from the crazy. But anyway, yeah, I love this movie. If you haven't seen it, obviously I'm going to recommend it. Yes. It's
wonderful. Silly.
Who's actually Edie McClurg, but everyone calls her Mrs. Poole. I mean, everyone that I know calls her Mrs. Poole because that's who she was when we were growing up. But
she's wonderful in this movie.
Chastity Pariah is hilarious. Yes. And one of my other favorite lines is like when they're at the picnic after they get the, you know, the sex soup, or like the sex-a-roll. And then, like, the next day when they're at the meeting and somebody says something and she's like, Calvin was the one. This other one was like, Calvin was the one painting everybody with apple butter.
Yeah, this was weird because I was sitting there watching this last night, and it's really strange because we don't know, like, we know who the villain is pretty much as soon as he's introduced. It's her Uncle Vincent. We don't know what his motive is until like 45 minutes into the movie. And then it's just like, oh, here's the villain's plot. And you're like, what? Like, this movie has like the weirdest pacing. Like, it flows and goes, and you're just sort of like, oh, okay. Like, you don't, it's never like bothersome, and it's never like, oh, why is it nothing? It's never like, this doesn't make sense, or why is this happening this way? Because everything is just, it's so funny that you don't really notice that it's like, oh, we're just now telling you what the evil plot is. And then it gets resolved within like 15, 20 minutes. I mean, literally, you know, pretty much from the beginning of the movie, like it starts out, she's watching or she's showing, oh, what the hell is that movie she was showing? Oh, I know what it is. I can't think of the title though. It's some terrible fucking B movie from the 50s. And she quits her job at the TV studio, finds out that her great aunt is dead. But she has to pay for, she has to put $50,000 down for her Vegas show. So she goes to Maine, which is a great montage of her driving. And she comes to
the axe murderer.
Yeah, the axe murderer who runs away. the Amish couple, the guy who blows himself up at the gas station. It's ridiculous. And it's just so much fun that you don't really care that none of this really makes a lot of sense, or that it's just sort of stuff is happening.
Well, that was the beauty, you know, that was the beauty, that when you could just make a movie that basically it went scene by scene.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, here's the scene we're going to be doing the driving montage. Here's the scene where she's going to be arriving at the house and seeing how decrepit it is. Here's the scene where we're going to redo the house, Revenge of the Nerd style. Here's the scene, you know, and it just goes, it doesn't really matter if it's all completely cohesive. Because it, you know, it kind of is.
Yeah, and she really holds it. It's her who holds it together, and that's the
support. It is. I mean, and she really is a lot of fun to watch.
She is, you know, and it's because she is so funny and so self-aware of the character. Mm-hmm. That's what makes it so fucking hilarious. It's not.
I mean, I love the fact that she has a great sense of humor about the fact. I mean, she wears the dress that's slit to her navel, and her tits are popping like crazy, and yet she's gonna stand there and make a joke about the fact that her tits are popping out, you know. And I love that. I love that brazen, open sexuality. Mm-hmm. And that's, I always wanted to, when I was growing up watching Movie Macabre, I always wanted to be her when I grew up. I was like, I want to host my own horror show, and I'm gonna be hot when I do it. And I don't know. There's something kind of freeing about that, just saying what's on your mind and being open about stuff like that. And I love her character. Yeah. I'm sure a lot of people have issues with it. You know, there may be, I haven't actually specifically heard of any, but there may be some feminist groups who complain about her. I don't know. They complain about everything, but, I
can't see why.
I'm just talking about, well, you know, I can't either, you know, but maybe because, you know, her tits are popping out. That's not the kind of feminist I am.
No, I mean, it's one of those things that I could see that if you just look at her, you could go, yeah, that's kind of questionable. But then you actually, like, you sit and you watch this movie, which she wrote, you know, she obviously has credit for part of the script. I'd say she probably wrote most of her own stuff. She comes across, she's got this great balance of being, the character is kind of like this ditzy sort of valley girl who came out of a weird, like, it's almost like she fits in, like, you could see her running around, like, in within a horror, actual, like, an actual horror movie with, you know, horror movie characters and being part of that world, but she's kind of like the ditzy valley girl of the horror universe in a sense. Mm-hmm. But she's self-aware of that and is making jokes about it, which is why it's so great, because it's like, yeah, she's doing something ditzy, but she's also, like, completely winking at the camera the entire time. Because she knows that she's making, you know, she knows her jokes are bad, and she makes a lot of bad jokes in this movie.
Oh, yeah. I cut you, man.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I could go on for fucking days.
And
or at least, you know, an hour and a half.
Yeah.
I could go from beginning to end.
When she gets pulled over by the cop, he's like, do you know you were doing 15 and 25? She's like, no, but if you hum a few bars, I can sing along. He starts writing the ticket anyway. Oh, I got to get a new joke. This one's costing me a fortune. It's just.
Right. She opens the panel and. Yeah.
It's so silly and ridiculous and wonderful that it's just,
it's
really
wonderful. It's silly ridiculousness.
Yeah. it's just, it's so completely absurd. And I honestly, I hadn't seen this movie in so long, and I laughed the entire time I was watching it. I was amazed at the jokes and innuendos she was getting away with for a PG-13 movie, because holy shit. Yeah, I love this movie. This was a lot of fun. I highly recommend this one. And it's available on Instant Watch, so you should definitely check it out if you haven't seen it before.
Oh, yeah, I definitely recommend this movie. It's fun. Nothing but fun.
Yeah. Admittedly, the pacing can kind of seem weird, but everything just, it's one of those movies, like you said, that, you know, it's a bunch of scenes kind of slapped together, but they make sense. Like, there's kind of a cohesive line of thought that goes, okay, well, this goes into this, and this goes into this, and it's like, ah, that makes sense to a point. You know, it's sort of like, I would say this is one of those few movies based on TV characters tend to not do so well. I mean, with the rare exceptions of, like, Wayne's World or something. Like, this is one of those few times where you take a TV character and put them in a movie and it actually works really well, where the joke, you know, the joke actually manages to carry the movie and not just, you know, fizzle out.
Or, like, you know, like it's Pat.
Yeah.
You know, the SNL movie, or which was just what?
Yeah.
I mean, those were funny skits. They were, but it's not enough to propel an entire movie. It's just not. You know?
And that's really the genius of Cassandra Peterson, is that she is so funny, and she has this amazing talent of being hysterically funny that it carries through the entire movie, considering the plot is completely ridiculous and paper thin. This is like the most ridiculous plotted movie I've ever seen, honestly.
Yeah, and I love it.
Yeah, and Uncle Vincent is great, and just this whole movie is wonderful. Bob's oblivious to everything, and the kid from Nightmare on Elm Street 3 who played the Wizard Master is in this as one of the teenagers, and Elvira's car is awesome. It's great. I fucking love this movie. It's hilarious. I don't know anybody, I don't think I've met anybody who's seen it who doesn't like this movie, honestly.
I don't think so either. I just don't see how you couldn't.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you just don't like to have fun.
Yeah.
But if you don't like to have fun, then what are you doing listening to us? Huh. That was so lame.
That's okay.
Oh, man.
So
blood is not reaching my brain properly.
It's the heat. So
yeah, that's definitely it.
So that is it for Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. We both highly recommend it. You should definitely check it out.
Yes, we do.
I've seen the other movie she did, Elvira's Haunted Hills.
I didn't like it.
I don't remember it well enough to comment particularly, other than I thought it was odd that she was in a period piece being Elvira.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Richard O'Brien was in it, which I thought was also kind of odd and awesome. But I don't really remember it well enough to be able to really say whether I liked it or not.
I need to watch it again. I do. I was just thinking that the other day when I was watching Elvira. I was thinking, you know, I should give Haunted Hills another chance. But I just remember not being crazy about it. And I think it's like for me trying to watch other Cheech and Chong movies that aren't Up in Smoke.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not crazy about them. You know, I just have that's who they are to me. Mm. I mean, that's what they are to me. That's what I expect them to be. And it's like when you have a favorite author and, you know, they write the same thing all the time. Like John Saul used to have a formula to his writing, and it became comfortable. You know, and a lot of people, you know, poo-pooed that because all of his books were basically the same. Yeah. It's like, you know, people move to a town and things are weird and more weird shit starts happening, and someone always put the car in gear, and someone always their gorge always rose. It was like those were his two favorite statements to use. But I looked for them, and like when I'm reading the book and I see him, I'm like, check. But then later in his career, he started writing completely different stories, mm-hmm. and it actually turned me off. I mean, I still like him, but I had grown comfort.
Mm-hmm.
To bull in his other style,
right.
And so that's why I think that happens to me. I get latched on to characters. I get latched on to, you know, I feel comfortable with them, and then when they go and change it up on me, then it takes me a while to warm up to it.
Yeah, I get that. And like I said, I think the idea behind Haunted Hills is kind of good, that it's like we're taking that same character and then putting her into something different. But I don't know if it necessarily works. Like I said, I haven't seen it in a while, so I'd have to rewatch it to really decide, but I remember it being kind of okay. I honestly, I can't say whether it was good or not, because I just don't remember. So, that's it. We'll be right back to do listener feedback and close out the show.
You love midnight movies, don't you? But can you handle midnight movies 24 hours a day?
Your death will be indescribable.
Find out on Black Flag TV. The first viral television on the web, Black Flag TV is entirely dedicated to haunting horror, science fiction, and cult movies. Broadcasting live, 24 hours a day, obscure independent movies and classic horror. Make Black Flag TV your sanctuary for the horror genre.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Visit us now, blackflag.tv.
So we got an email this week from Mike from Badass's Boobs and Blood, from BB&C, because I can't remember how
to... I always want to say Badass's Boobs and Blowjobs. I don't know why, but that is not the name.
No. So Mike says, hey you two, just some quick feedback on episode 28. Great coverage on both trauma films, though I have yet to see Poltergeist, Night of the Chicken Dead, and I'm in no hurry to. The Toxic Avenger remains one of my favorites after all these years, and is the reason I love trauma and the schlock they make or distribute. Anyway, so this was going to be quick, and it is. Please do Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, some justice, or you'll have hell to pay. Thank you, Mike. So, thank you, Mike. Yeah, I would agree. Toxic Avenger is probably still my favorite of the trauma films I've seen. I love Cannibal the Musical, but that's because I love the guys who do South Park. I think they're just hilarious. Cannibal's really funny. Orgasmo's pretty funny. Basketball's pretty funny. But mm-hmm. South Park...
Again, it's all the South Park.
Yeah, all the stuff that they've done has been either really, really good or kind of terrible, but still good because it's them. So, and I fucking love Team America World Police. It's probably one of the funniest puppet movies that I've ever seen.
Fuck yeah!
I was like, that should be the national anthem of the Bush era.
Fuck yeah! Of course you'd say that.
Yeah, I know, I'm just a dirty liberal.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been dropping the F-bomb a couple of times tonight more than usual. That's not usually me, but I don't know. I guess I'm just wound up. I think we did Elvira and Justice, don't you?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think we did quite as much as Creepy Kitsch did, because they fucking praised that movie to the heavens and back. But we did. I think we did pretty good for it, you know. We both really enjoyed it. I was actually kind of worried because I remember I started to watch it one time, like maybe a couple of months ago. I was kind of drunk watching it. And I was like, this movie is fucking terrible. And then I watched it last night. And I'm like, no, this is wonderful. It's terrible because it's, you know, it's terrible, but it's hilariously terrible in a wonderful way. So clearly I should not watch some movies when I'm drunk. But
that's a life lesson.
Yes.
Right there.
You have some shout outs, I believe.
I do, yeah. There's just, you know, we have a lot of wonderful fans out there, listeners, and I really don't like calling them fans.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I
mean,
feel weird about that.
That seems...
kind of pretentious.
Kind of pretentious, yeah, and no, that's not what, they're listeners. Yeah. And
friends of the show.
And friends of the show, yeah, and friends of mine. There are a couple of people out there who are surprised that... You know, they'll send me a message and then I'll send them a message right back. Mm-hmm. And they're actually surprised at my, you know, accessibility. Why? I'm, you know, I'm just as accessible as anyone else.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's, we all are. We're people.
I'm relatively easy to get a hold of. It's just that if you tweet me, I may not be able to respond just because my fucking Twitter app, my phone sucks. But I try to get back to everybody.
My Twitter app is, it's on my nerves, but I have been using it a lot lately, so yeah, it could be worse. But anyway, so there are some really amazing people out there in the podcast world and outside the podcast world, and I really just want to say hi, you know, to the guys of Skeleton Crew. Mm-hmm. I was talking to Alex today, and I am dragging their asses on our show at some point. I don't know if you heard the latest episode of Corpse Cast.
The Frankenhooker one?
Yes.
No, not yet.
Okay, well, I have a voicemail on that show.
Oh.
Where I called into them, and Shane and Mike are just adorable. I love them so much. And Jen, while we were listening to the show, Jen's like, he sounds like Shane. Sounds like Danny Bonaducci. And I'm like, yeah. So I told him. I just said that. I'm like, you do. Yeah, he really does. If you listen to it, he sounds like Danny Bonaducci, except... I prefer him over Tucci. I love that show. They're so hilarious. They're right out in the open, mm-hmm. and you can be as dirty as you want to be on that show, and that's fun. So we got to get them over here too, if there wouldn't be like a circuit overload.
Yeah.
And Mike, of course, from BB&C, mm-hmm. BB&BC, he's great. Kelly is fantastic. David was sweet to ask about me this week. And Doug Tilley, I want to say hi to him. He is, been very supportive of us and everything. And, I think he's going to be coming on Evil Episodes soon. And he's a fellow caster and he's pretty awesome. And, Beardy Freak from Twitter and Puma Man Redux. I mean, so it's just this, the past couple of weeks have just, we've kind of like blown up in listeners mm-hmm. and, or at least people who were contacting who were listening. And so if I've forgotten anyone, I'm sorry, I'll try to go back and round up any that I missed, but I just want everyone to know how much I appreciate the fact that you're getting in touch with us, that mm-hmm. you're letting us know you're out there, that you're listening and that you go back and actually listen to older shows. That's phenomenal. Yes.
I know Alex from Skeleton Crew was saying that, not all of the old episodes are on the Horrorphilia feed. If you want all of the old episodes going back to episode one, they are available through the regular Devour the Podcast feed, which is on iTunes. So just look for Devour the Podcast. You'll see the current logo with the teeth and the thing that said Devour the Podcast on it. That'll have episodes one to whatever we're at, one to the current episode. And that will probably end up changing at some point down the line because of server space, but we'll see how that goes, depending on what Mike says.
Oh. One more thing, Art Riskin, sorry. he's a guy who found us because of my written review on Horrorphilia, and then he found the show.
Oh, awesome.
And he's a fan, so welcome aboard.
I want to say happy birthday to Paula. She is a friend of mine on Facebook. She's from around here. She just found the new feed to the show.
Paula Hansen.
Yeah, she messaged me on Facebook. She's like, I just found the feed again. I was like, oh, I'm like, you didn't know you had lost it. I was like, I didn't know the old feed didn't work. But yeah, she just found the new feed. So hopefully she'll be hearing this one. So hi, Paula. Happy birthday.
Paula, happy birthday.
But yeah, like I said, if you tweet at me and I don't respond, it's not because I'm ignoring you. It's probably because I'm out or my phone is being stupid and I just can't get to Twitter to work. Facebook, however, if you hit me up on Facebook, I will respond relatively quickly. My Facebook app works pretty well, or I'm near my computer. So that's the easy way to get a hold of me. And I try to respond to everybody. I was talking to Kelly this weekend while I was trying to watch Severed Ways. And I reminded him that if he's got any questions about working on his show, to just shoot me an email and I would help him out. So waiting on that, Kelly, whenever you get around to it. But yeah, that's about it. Once again, thank you guys, everybody, for listening. We really appreciate it. I really appreciate it that you guys take the time to sit and listen to this ridiculous nonsense that we do every week.
We have a good time.
Yeah, we do.
And I don't know. Ah, you guys are great. I love you so much. Oh, wait. No. One more. Okay. Oh. Can't believe I forgot Stupid Hamster.
Oh, yeah. I just just saw that today.
Yeah, she's a dream. And she picked us up from SlasherCast. So that's so cool. Awesome. Thank you. I'm so glad you're out there.
Yes.
And I don't know. I know I'm missing people. I know it.
Yeah, I'm sure I'm missing people.
I'm so sorry, guys. I love you all.
I just haven't written down any of my new Twitter followers lately because I don't know. I'm never sure if they're just people who are following me for publicity reasons or if they're following because they're listeners. I don't know. So if you are a listener and you are following me or you've just followed me, please let me know you're a listener so I'll mention you on the show. So, but yeah, like I said, Facebook, that's the easiest way to get a hold of me. Or you can email me. My contact info is at the end of the show, as always. So yeah, that's pretty much it. Next week, we'll be doing VHS because it comes out, for us, it's tomorrow. When you guys are hearing this, it came out on Thursday. And we'll be doing that along with the film The Baby for our It Came From the Instant Queue selection. Yeah. I'm looking forward
to it. And that one messed up. I like that movie.
Yeah, that's one of those ones that I been kind of waiting to see for a long time, and it's been sitting on my queue for fucking ever because I just haven't gotten around to watching it. I am looking forward to that. So do you have any upcoming stuff you want to plug before we get out of here?
No, I would like to mention that the Etheria Film Festival is going to be in Boston in September, the weekend of September 16th.
Awesome.
So that's sci-fi and fantasy movies made by women, brought to you by the Visceral Organization. So make sure to check that out. Oh, also, there's going to be an upcoming Visceral Organization podcast mm-hmm. that I'm going to be doing, and you guys look out for, and David's going to be doing.
I'll be producing it.
Right, yeah, David will be producing it, and I'll be hosting it, and we're going to have on, you know, filmmakers, mm-hmm. staff people. It's going to be really fun, and you can. That'll be a good way to keep up with what's going on with Viscera, because maybe it'll be coming your way, yeah. And you don't want to miss it.
Definitely.
So, you know, there's that. You talked about our upcoming with Corey.
Mm-hmm.
Are you coming on Evil Episodes again? Recently or sometime soon?
Sometime soon, yeah. When you guys do the
the
first kids horror segment.
That's right. Oh yeah, we're trying to get Slasher Cast Jack for that one. So Mike wants to complete his set of Slasher Cast hosts, and
they're like Pokemon.
And they are. And except much cuter. and Jack actually has recommended several times, he's talked about it on his show, the movie that we're going to be talking about. So we're trying to get him to come on board and talk to us about it.
Cool.
So, and I guess that's it. Okay. And until next week when we watch some VHS, which I'm very excited about, yes. And The Baby, which is just a weird movie.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. And I'm looking forward to that. So. And next week, the sound quality may be a little different. I'm going to be in a different location next week, and hopefully it won't be hot as fuck. Well, it probably will, because I'm going to be down south a little ways. But hopefully the where I'm going to be recording will not be super hot, and the acoustics will be a little different. So it may get a different sound, but it should be fine. So, I think that's everything. Yeah, so we will be back next week, and we will talk to you guys later.
All right, bye, everyone.
Bye, everybody.
Pleasant dream.
If you wish to contact Devour the Podcast, you can reach us by email at CenobiteDave, that's CenobiteDave at gmail.com, or Maven1974 at gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at DDelamorte, DDELLAMORTE, or Maven1974. To visit the site, go to devourthepodcast.blogspot.com. And now you can leave a message on our fancy new voicemail at 760-661-7280.